This free State of Belief radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support. Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. This week we're broadcasting from the Center for American Progress Studios in Washington, D.C. You don't need me to tell you that this weekend marks the 10th anniversary of the attacks of 9/11, a sunny Tuesday morning when life changed for all of us and ended for thousands of our countrymen and women. As the television news channels play and replay video footage of that terrible day, as the pundits analyze the impact it had on our foreign and domestic policy, and as survivors and families gather quietly to remember those whom they lost, here on State of Belief Radio, we take a look at the intervening decade. What impact did the attacks have on us? Not just that day, but in the many days that have passed since then. Are there lessons we've learned? Are there still lessons that we must learn? Joining us on this week's show are some voices I've been particularly gratified to feature in the past. Imam Khalid Latif, chaplain at New York University and the Muslim chaplain for the New York City Police Department. We'll hear also from Rabbi Irwin Kula, president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership. I'll also be talking to Reverend Dr. James Forbes, Jr., senior minister emeritus at Riverside Church in New York City and president and founder of the Healing of the Nations Foundation. And finally, I'll have a few thoughts of my own to share on this solemn anniversary. I want to begin the program today with Imam Latif, who was a very young man indeed in 2001. Imam Latif, from both a faith and a generational perspective, I really wanted to make sure you were a part of this special commemoration. So welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Imam, I'm sure your work in both the academic and law enforcement worlds in New York City have exposed you to many people personally affected by the events of 9/11. As we mark the 10th anniversary this weekend, how do you see the decade since that event as having changed you personally and having changed our nation and having changed the world?
You know, for me personally, I was an undergrad in New York City on September 11th, 2001. I was doing my undergrad at NYU, and I actually witnessed the second plane flying into the towers. And in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, and I think going into the last few days even of my life, there's been a deep impact that those horrendous attacks have had on pretty much everything that I've been doing with my life. We see that there is a lot of rhetoric and discourse just around Islam and the place of Muslims in the United States, where viable political parties have built campaigns and platforms just on the idea of whether it's even appropriate or not for Muslims to be in this country. And I think a lot of the work that I've been doing these days and a lot of the questions that I fielded and a lot of what we try to do through our center at NYU is to create a safe space, a community space where Muslims are able to kind of grow and develop and formulate their identity without having to feel as if they are marginalized or existing on the fringes of society, and at the same time serve as a resource to many who just have genuine questions around Islam and what its teachings and values are.
Do you think there are lessons that we've learned from the attacks and from what followed them?
It's interesting and somewhat unfortunate, I think, how tragedy sometimes brings people together. People from all walks of life in the next year will be commemorating and remembering beyond their faith-based traditions, beyond their ethnic and cultural backgrounds, beyond any kind of characteristic that would set them apart, and they're looking for reasons to come together to remember. I think what we would understand also from this tragedy is that there are some people who are, for whatever reason, just immensely terrible people, that they have utter disregard for human life. And the way that we counter that narrative is to show how we appreciate and sanctify this human life in general, where we don't look for reasons, again, to push one another apart or conditionalize our giving and support of each other, but we seek to find what we share in common, that which is our shared humanity, and ultimately try to be a resource to one another.
Imam Lateef, what is your message for all of us on this 10th anniversary day?
You know, we want to be able to come together despite and in spite of those who try to keep us apart. And I think what people in New York City and people in the United States have been able to demonstrate and will continue to have the opportunity to demonstrate is how strong our bonds actually are. By no means does unity equate to uniformity, and we shouldn't be a people who think that we have to look the same way, believe the same way, eat the same food or dress in the same clothing or speak the same languages, even to have a reason to stand side by side. We can be very different from one another, but we can still find something in common that says, I am fully able and willing and happy to be standing with you just because you are my brother or sister in humanity.
What do you think are the most important things that we can do so that when we look back 10 years from now, we'll be able to say that we found grace in all of this?
I think we have to move beyond discourse and conversation and start living what our traditions and our respective faiths tell us to live as. I think we need to live our faith, essentially. We need to put our faith into action, and we need to start building more coalitions and coming together to really see how we can change society and some of the ills that exist within it.
Imam, you're a wise person. Is there anything else that you'd like to add for the good of this show and for the benefit of our listeners?
You know, I would say that on this day and every day, my thoughts and my prayers are continuously with those who lost loved ones on that tragic day 10 years ago, as well as each and every individual who has been affected in the aftermath of it. I think we have an immense potential of healing and reconciliation, and we as just a human race can come together and really overcome anything so long as we would want to.
Imam Khalid Lateef is the chaplain and director of the Islamic Center at New York University, and he serves as the Muslim chaplain for the New York Police Department. Imam Lateef, thank you for joining us again today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for having me.
We're commemorating the 10th anniversary of 9/11 with the thoughts and messages of some prominent faith leaders. Coming up next, the Reverend Dr. James Forbes, Jr. You're listening to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. I'm very grateful that over the years I've been able to do as host of this radio show what I have done personally a longer time even than that, and that is to be able to call on my friend, Reverend Dr. James Forbes Jr., for wisdom and insight. Back in March, we spoke in Vietnam about the long-term effects of the use of Agent Orange during the Vietnam War. And now we have the opportunity to talk about the long-term effects of the terrorist attacks of 9/11. Jim is the Senior Minister Emeritus of Riverside Church in New York City, and he's the president and founder of the Healing of the Nations Foundation. Jim, as always, thanks for making the time to be with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Good to be with you.
As we mark the 10th anniversary of 9/11 this weekend, how do you see that event as having changed you, having changed our nation, and having changed the world?
One of the most significant changes has been the awareness that the shock of that awful day came because of our sense of being exceptional. That is, we have tended to be beyond the kind of vulnerability that most people live with. We've been strong enough. We've been protected enough. We've been even militarily strong to prevent that kind of thing from happening. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, we become a very vulnerable nation. So the most significant change for me is that it has forced me to deal with the question, in what sense are we exceptional? I love my country. I love all of the history about our freedom, our justice, our being champions of democracy. But what this does to me is it forces me to ask the question, in what way are we exceptional, and in what way are we prepared to sustain the positive exceptionalism most people would apply to their own nation?
Jim, do you think there are specific lessons that we've learned from the attacks and from what followed?
I think we've learned that nobody is, in a sense, protected totally by military might or by military preparedness or even by geography. To be human is to, at some point, experience vulnerability to the ravages both of nature as well as inhumane action from other people. So everybody is open to assault one way or the other. But more important, when it happens to you, that is the time that tests your true character. Since a kind of knee-jerk reaction is to lash out at whatever has, in a sense, imperiled our existence, the real question is, what are the values about how we deal with conflict? Is it primarily by the brawn, by our muscle? Or is it by ways of conflict resolution that's based on mutuality of respect, but also the recognition of how brutal people can be? And I think that's where I am today. I'm saying, look, we are like other people. Are we also special in terms of having a message to say, how do you deal with conflict in a world, in a globe that's increasingly fraught with violence here and there? What do we as Americans have to offer other than our military prowess? That's a question we need to be able to answer.
Jim, there have been several times over the last several years of State of Belief Radio when I've turned to you and said, what is your message about this or that? I remember we did that regarding an Easter Sunday. We've done it on other religious holidays. We've done it in relation to other major moments in the history of our nation. And so I have to ask you now, what is your message on this 10th anniversary of 9/11?
The message that is in my heart is that we not only are the inheritors of a great tradition of democracy and peace and justice, we are at this point in history called upon to provide leadership. And I think that leadership comes as we recover the moral and spiritual virtues that inspired the founding of this nation, and then discover how do those values function in an increasingly fractious world. And my sense is spiritual renewal and moral values will determine how well we can teach the rest of the nations of the world what it is like to move into a 21st century that is clearly highly technical, but also increasingly challenged with respect to moral character and the fibers of our spirit.
Jim, when you look around you and look inside you, do you feel positive or negative about us doing that?
I'm a strange guy, Welton. When it has been revealed what trouble I'm in and what possibilities are available to me, I tend to choose that which promises life and hope for the future. And for that reason, I think 9/11 opened our eyes. It, in a sense, measured the depth of our character. And for that reason, I'm just going to choose to be positive that we will hear the message, that we will look forward to sustaining strong defense, but that we will renew our commitment to moral and spiritual fortitude as well. So let me say, don't count this on the basis of expert analysis. Just my spirit is inclined to say, once we see ourselves, at least the option is available to us to choose the path that leads to life and to hope and to possibility of peace and justice.
Man, I like your spirit. That's why I talk to you so much, is because I need to feed off of that spirit. Jim, what do you think are the most important things that we can do so that 10 years from now, when we look back, we'll be able to say that we found grace in all of this?
I think that we should acknowledge that globalization rids us of any kind of special protection against vulnerability. And therefore, we should become leaders, not of a free world, but of a safe globe. And that means we should become experts in what is it that reduces the provocation to internecine warfare and to nations against nations. If we, with our strong defense, also become teachers of the nations about what conditions hold the best prospect for our living and surviving on the globe of today's world, if we did that, we should get double bonus in history for not only capacity to protect ourselves, but also to project a vision of societies that learn how to get along together. That, if we can do that, why? History in thousands and thousands of years to come will sing wonderful praises about America at this point in its history.
Reverend Dr. James Forbes, Jr. is Senior Minister Emeritus at Riverside Church in New York City and the President and Founder of Healing of the Nations Foundation at healingofthenations.com. The foundation's mission is to promote the healing of our nation and the recovery of the moral and spiritual values that Jim has been discussing that inspired our nation's founding by fostering a level of spiritual awareness that empowers individuals and communities to become a compassionate voice and a committed force that takes action for peace, justice, interfaith partnership, and environmental responsibility. Jim, as always, thank you so much for doing some of that work here on State of Belief Radio this very day.
And thank you for letting me be a part of the movement that is going to be faithful in this task as long as we have breath.
Please stay tuned as we continue our special commemoration of the 10th anniversary of 9/11. We'll hear from Rabbi Irwin Kula right after this break. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. This free State of Belief Radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support. Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. Our next guest always brings a thoughtful and spiritual perspective to challenging issues. Rabbi Irwin Kula is president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership. He's the author of the award-winning book, Yearnings, Embracing the Sacred Messiness of Life. And he's always a welcome guest. Rabbi Kula, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you.
It's the 10th anniversary of the World Trade Center attacks, and I really want to know from you, where have we been and where are we going?
You know, well, I usually am the completely optimistic person. I've done a lot of thinking about this 10-year anniversary, as many of us have. I think actually we're in a worse place. We are damaged. We have not done any healing from the trauma. There has been no forgiveness, reconciliation, justice, or hope. And I think at the 10-year anniversary, we as a country, we need to ask very seriously if we are going to allow fear and anger to continue to crowd out every possible response but revenge. Mm. And we can see what it's done to the country. You don't have to be a religious or spiritual person to know that when fear and anger crowds out every possible response, things begin to rot at the core. And, you know, we spent $1 trillion in war, and we spent $10 billion in diplomacy. And that's all you need to know. $10 billion trying to foster some sort of new relationships given the incredible trauma. Mm-hmm. And $1 trillion as a militant response to an attack. That's all you need to know.
What would you like to be able to say 10 years from now as we look back on 9/11/2021?
That conservatives and liberals each understood the partial truth of the other. The partial truth of conservatives is that sometimes there really is evil, and even though evil is a social construction, as liberals say, sometimes that evil gets so difficult to deal with that you do need to eliminate it. But it turns out what liberals are correct about is that evil is always a product of cause and effect. And no matter what, without justifying the evil, we are implicated in the evil that happens. And liberals look at causes. We looked at no causes. Conservatives only look at evil and imagine it just sprouts out. So what we need is a much more nuanced approach that allows us to ask the personal responsibility question as a country. What have we in any way, shape, or form done to help create an environment in which this much hate in the world is focused at us? And that does not justify the hate, even one percentage point. But it asks an important question that allows us to understand that even if we have to be at war, even if we have to kill, all killing does is just the worst fallback position to give us space to actually address the issues in more diplomatic ways. And we'd be able to look back 10 years from now and say, we actually did understand. We did do things that create an environment. We began to create new kinds of relationships across this planet using the best of what America is, not fear and anger, but possibility and hope and conversation and be able to process this trauma, because this trauma is taking us down as a country.
Irwin, when you put those two together and you look at where we are, and I don't disagree with what you said at all, and then you look at where you'd like for us to be in 10 years. It's important, I think, for us to look at what is our responsibility individually. And that leads me to ask you this question. Is where we are today the fault of the American people? Do we simply have to take responsibility for where we are, or and not to let us off the hook, but are there people trying to keep us this way?
I think that what's really important in that kind of question is everyone has to know who they are in the drama.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So George Bush is one person in the drama. He needs to look in the mirror. Dick Cheney is another person in the drama. But Irwin Kula is in the drama, too. And I think what we have to be very careful about doing if 10 years from now we want to be in a different place, if we want to be in a different place, what we have to do is everyone has to take responsibility for who they are in the drama. If you're a person living in Tennessee with no political power at all, you're just a normal citizen living in Tennessee, but it's your state, and that mosque in that small community in Tennessee is being intimidated and being coerced, then you have a responsibility in your state as a regular citizen. Maybe you don't have a responsibility to change the American diplomatic relationship with the entire Arab Middle East. It's where we have responsibility and nothing more. And everybody has to stop projecting on people more powerful than them that it's their fault.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, Maimonides says, in a moment of trauma, he says, either because you've been conquered or because there's been a famine, the first thing the community needs to do is ask of themselves, what is their responsibility? Not what's the responsibility of the enemy. The enemy did bad things. Not what's the responsibility of someone with more power. People with power are always going to be corrupt. The real issue is, who are we in the drama? When we heard George Bush say with that bullhorn, that day, September 14, 2011, where America was really at its worst at that moment, where George Bush gets up with the bullhorn and he says, the rest of the world and the people who knocked down this building will hear all of us soon. They'll hear all of us soon. What every American needs to ask is, what do we want to be heard? Because what happened that moment is what was heard was the very worst of America.
Yeah.
That was the very worst of America. It was understandable. It is. We're just normal, regular people with all the fears of everybody else, no matter how powerful we are as a country, but it was the worst of America. What do we really want our neighbors to hear? What do we really want, in this case, regarding this specific trauma, what do we want our American Muslim citizen neighbors to hear from us? What do we want them to hear? And then what do we want to hear? What do we want the rest of the world to hear? And it's one person at a time.
You know, I have, from this studio, called you several times at various festival times or times of remembrance and said, what's your message for this moment? It's not as if you haven't already been talking about that. But if you got 2 minutes, what is your message for the nation on the anniversary of 9/11?
I'd say first that we remember people for whom the trauma is most real. When we begin to do that, we'll begin to heal too. If you lost a father, a mother, a brother, a sister, a child, then you are at the center of the trauma. And it's very important for those of us not at that center to not confuse our pain with their pain. Because when everybody's pain becomes the same, then the anger gets out of control. So I'd say it's time for us to nuance. Everybody has to take care of somebody who's closer to the center, as opposed to everybody focusing out trying to destroy some enemy that we think did this. So that would be the first thing. Let's take care of the people at the center of the trauma, the people who are most vulnerable. And the second thing I'd say is, now let's look at people and begin to nuance who the enemy is too. We did not do a good job of nuancing the enemy. If you are a Muslim citizen in this country, you have been terrorized in the last 10 years. And both of us have spoken to many Muslim citizens in this country and know that. And we have to stop. stop terrorizing our own people right here. We have to begin to nuance. There is real enemies. There are people who really want to kill us, and we have to be very surgical in what we're doing. And that's about 20% of what we have to do. 80% of what we have to do is to talk to people who are different, to try to understand, so that we can actually have some forgiveness, some reconciliation, some justice, and some hope.
Hmm. Rabbi Irwin Kula was listed 4 years in a row in Newsweek as one of America's top 10 rabbis. He's the author of the award-winning book, Yearnings, Embracing the Sacred Messiness of Life. He's the president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership. I always, always appreciate his insights. Rabbi Kula, my friend, thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, and welcome. Thank you for everything, really, that you've been doing. I've been seeing you on TV, and what you're doing every time, it's just exactly the right tone and message. And I am so proud to be connected to you and Interfaith Alliance. So proud.
As we continue our commemoration of the 10th anniversary of the attacks of 9/11, I'd like to share a few thoughts of my own. That's coming up next. I'm Welton Gaddy. This is State of Belief Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. On today's show, you've heard comments and messages for the national remembrance of 9/11 from a number of different perspectives, each of them filled with great wisdom. And now, here are some of my own thoughts about this day. What I wish for every one of us on the 10th anniversary of the horrific terrorist attacks on our nation is an experience of good grief. Grief intensifies rapidly when remembering the incalculable loss of people whom we loved, the sickening sense of being violated personally and nationally, unrelenting images that spike our fears and fill our stomachs with nausea. How can the adjective good ever be allowed to qualify the noun grief? What is good grief? What's the meaning of what I wish for all of us on this somber weekend? Tragedy compounds tragedy when, from the anguish of grief and the potential poison of fear, we turn inward, totally inward. We learn nothing that will prevent a repetition of the cause of such grief. And we allow ourselves to burn with resentment seeking retaliation and revenge rather than to experience the peace of a resolve to create a different kind of world. I've heard many people say the world changed on September 11, 2011. Actually, the world already had changed by that date, though not everyone in our land had paid serious attention to the changes. Diversity had increased. New eco-political goals had emerged. The shocking terrorism that we had witnessed abroad had crept closer to our shorelines. The manipulation of religion had proven to be a powerful form of causing divisions and inspiring a strategy for using divisions to gain power here at home and abroad. New tactics of warfare were underway. Resentment toward the United States had risen to a level beyond most of our expectations. And all of this had occurred in an interdependent world in which a decision made in Pakistan or Afghanistan could trigger a bomb in one of our neighborhoods. September 11, 2011, awakened us to the challenge of vast diversity in our land and to the vulnerability of all Americans to experience abuse stemming from religion-based hatred. Alongside Jewish, Christian, Hindu, and Buddhist Americans, as well as Americans of no religious persuasion, Muslim Americans mourned the loss of family members, colleagues, and friends, knowing that someone claiming to identify with their own faith had done the killing. The uncommon union we felt in grief should now be repeated in a communion I'm sorry, let me do that sentence again. The uncommon union we felt in grief should now be repeated in a common union that brings us together as citizens committed to a more just and peaceful world. Like most of you, I remember exactly where I was when the first plane hit the first tower in the World Trade Center that unforgettable morning. I was stepping off a treadmill in a hotel in Denver, Colorado. I had traveled there to do a speech for Interfaith Alliance of Colorado that evening. The occasion for the speech became a venue for shared grief, words of comfort, and even some comments of challenge. On that evening, I suggested that some people would use the dastardly events of this dreadful day to idolize security and to try to seriously jeopardize our liberty. Little did I know how quickly my suggestion would become a reality, and little did I anticipate with what vigor some people would attack basic constitutional rights and be willing to relinquish both religious freedom and civil liberties. I sincerely hope that a part of today's memorialization of 9/11 involves a recommitment to protecting and expanding freedom in this land rather than to allowing a bunch of misdirected fanatics to prevail in altering the soul of this nation. We already have given up too much to terrorists, our loved ones being the greatest sacrifice. For goodness sakes, let's not also give up freedom. We never will experience a victory over terrorism by becoming like terrorists in our own ideas and actions. To be sure, it's a time for grieving. But interminable grieving turns into a dangerous illness, nationally as well as personally. That's why I hope, and actually I pray, that we experience a good grief that ultimately energizes us to work for a land of freedom in religion, government, and opportunity for everybody in a world that values peace more than conflict. From a good grief can come a passion for a better life and the vision of a better world. So let it be among us. So let it be right now. Well, friends, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Visit us online at stateofbelief.com to find out more about the show, to listen to show archives, and to sign up for our podcast. Tell us what you like about the program and tell us what you think we could do better. We always want to hear from you. Contact information is available at stateofbelief.com, including the listener line, 202-238-3291. And please tell a friend about our show and encourage them to listen too. I love the image I carry in my mind of several people sitting around listening to our show and then having a good discussion about what we've discussed on the air. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. You can find more information about the work of the Alliance, both in Washington and in chapters across the country, at interfaithalliance.org. I know I don't have to tell you, this work is important. It deserves your support, and we need you. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And by all means, join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. But until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.